Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace, and they're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. If I can use Angie and enjoy it, so can you. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides to tell you what others have paid for similar projects both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today. The app and the website are free to use. Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Today is Monday, April 29th, 2024. Larry Johnson is here with us, fresh off of his testimony to the United Nations Security Council and ready to pounce on Joe Biden, who wants to send $1 trillion to Ukraine over the next 10 years. But first this. How do you really feel about your financial future right now, today? Stable or uncertain? Despite all the happy talk that the Fed and the banks want you to buy into, I believe that 2024 is going to be a very unstable year, politically and financially. That's one of the reasons I decided to buy physical gold and silver, and I suggest you should do the same and do it now. Why? Because throughout times of economic uncertainty, gold and silver have rightly earned a reputation for stability. Owning precious metals has made me feel more stable, and it can do the same for you. Reach out to my friends at Lear Capital and get their free wealth protection guides. You can reach them at 800-511-4620. Lear has earned an excellent reputation by helping thousands of customers just like you move portions of their retirement savings into Lear gold and silver IRAs. It's easy to do, and it's tax and penalty free. Don't be caught off guard. Experts predict the markets may tank again. You'll be happy if you have protection in place. So call Lear at 800-511-4620. 800-511-4620 or go to LearJudgeSnap.com and tell them your friend the judge sent you. So reports are out that, Larry, welcome here, my dear friend. It's always a pleasure. Yeah. We missed you on the roundtable. Your young sidekick, Matt Ho, did a very admirable job.
He did.
However, when we posted your clip of your comments to the United Nations, it's up to over 130,000 views. The Judging Freedom viewers very much appreciate you, Larry, even if they might not have recognized you with your hair slicked back and your somewhat shaven look. And there you are. We'll play a little bit of the clip later, and I will ask you in a few minutes what your purpose was there, and more importantly, how you were received by the others. But before we get there, the White House has leaked this morning. I don't know how they think they gained by this, but whatever. I'll let you comment on it. The president's view that the Congress should commit to distribute $1 trillion to Ukraine, including $500 billion in infrastructure reconstruction over the next 10 years, a statute crafted in such a way as to tie the hands of the next two presidencies, no matter who may occupy them. Is this insane, or is there something beyond insanity that will adequately describe this?
Well, yes, insane is an appropriate term because, you know, clearly it would be challenged in court, number one. It'll be strung out over the years, and I think ultimately be found to be an unconstitutional act by Biden. But, you know, it really belies the failure to grasp what's going on the ground in Ukraine. They're losing, and they're losing badly, and they're losing quickly. The amount of territory that's being gobbled up by the Russians right now is unlike anything we've seen in the last 2 years, more than 2 years, since the start of the special military operation. Russia is now putting their foot on the accelerator, so to speak, and they're moving fast, and they're moving across the broad front. And all of the money in the world, let's say Biden, give him $5 trillion, give him $10 trillion. It's not going to make human beings, and it's not going to fill the ranks of the Ukrainian army with competent professionals. It's just so, you know, this is sort of like playing Monopoly. You got all this fake money. Yeah, you can buy properties, and but it's not real. That's the point. The other thing is it sends a message to Americans. You are a second priority. We have kids in Baltimore high schools that something like 96% cannot read or do math at grade level. We have crumbling infrastructure ourselves in the United States across the board that's not being addressed. We got 100,000 dying from fentanyl, and we're spending all this money over in Ukraine. Makes sense.
Ray, McGovern, in his usual McGovern-esque fashion, reported this morning in some length on the efforts by the CIA and the NSA to twist the arm successfully, as we know, of Mike Johnson. And he speculated as to what they may have showed the Speaker of the House in the secure room, the skiff in the basement of the Capitol, in order to flip him 180 degrees on aid to Ukraine. Remember, he consistently voted against it when he was Congressman Johnson. Now, as Speaker Johnson, he's 100% before it. I'm sorry to say this because Trump is uninformed. When Trump did a flip and supported Johnson on this, What do you think the CIA would have told him to frighten him? Something personal about him? Some intercepted communications? Some photographs of something from the sky?
I think it was something probably along the lines that here's the trajectory of what's going on in Ukraine. They're going to collapse by the end of the summer if you don't provide this money. And if you don't provide this money, you're going to be responsible. And we, the intelligence community, will come out and say so. You know, Judge, I don't want to be responsible for that. And let me emphasize, we're not related. Okay, that Johnson, no part of my family.
Do you know, Larry, you and I have been friends for a long time. I don't even realize that you have the same last name because you are so radically different human beings.
Yeah, that's why I wear the beard.
Will there be a Ukraine to receive this money?
No. In fact, I think we're on the threshold of seeing some very quick and dramatic changes. This is, you remember 6 months ago, people were saying, oh, it's going to be a stalemate. You know, they're talking about 2025, 2026, maybe 2027. No, what happens in the next, so the term of Zelensky expires. I mean, his term is up, but the inauguration of the new president wasn't supposed to happen until May 20th, somewhere in there.
Is there a new president? Because I don't think they had an election, did they?
No, they didn't. So this is what happened. Zelensky, this, you know, the leader of a great democracy, canceled the elections. And he did that while he was gelling opposition political members and shutting down opposition press and attacking the Eastern Orthodox Christian Church. You know, all things that a good Democrat, I guess, does. And so by declaring that the election is not going forward, well, they're not having an election, but his term is still up. And I think the Russians, they're going to wait until that term ends and he's no longer a legitimate president under international law, and then they're going to really apply the pressure. But when you watch what's happening all along that 1,000-mile front, the Russians are pushing, and everywhere they push, the Ukrainians have to try to rush troops to close that hole in the dike because water is pouring through. And they don't have enough troops to do that, number one. They don't have enough weapons to force the Russians to go backwards. So, this is heading towards a collision that's going to be very, very bad for Ukraine.
Colonel McGregor reported yesterday in emails to me that Ukraine lost 8,000 troops dead last week, and that a Russian general, forgive me, I don't have the name, has arrived on the scene with 100,000 fresh Russian troops. I mean, you can't even make a comparison here.
Let's face it, as you get older, after a night with drinks, you don't bounce back the next day like you used to. Thanks to ZBiotics, you don't have to make the choice of having a great night or a great next day. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink alcohol, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It is this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break down this byproduct. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night. Drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. So go to ZBiotics.com/judge to get 15% off your first order when you use judge at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/judge and use the code judge at checkout for your 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode of Judging Freedom.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Right. You know, Russia started this whole special military operation in February 2022 with only about 150,000, 175,000 troops. And they demonstrated back then that they completely went against conventional military theory, which always says that an attacking force needs to have a 3-to-1 advantage over the defenders in order to have any hopes of prevailing. Well, it was just the opposite. Ukraine had the 3-to-1 advantage, and yet the Russians, you know, made that initial thrust where they were even up around Kiev. And then when it looked like there was going to the peace negotiations had progressed to a point, the Russians withdrew. And then when they realized that the West had betrayed the process and that Ukraine had crumbled under Western pressure, then Russia said, oh, okay, now we've got to go to war. And that's when they did that first mobilization in September of 2022. Since then, throughout 2023, they were having Russian young men sign up at the rate of a 40,000 a month. So they raised an additional 500,000 on top of the 300,000 plus that were mobilized in September of 2022. And throughout, so far, we're going into our it's 4 months now, and they continue to sign up another 160,000 troops. So Russia recognizes we're at war with NATO, and so we've got to prepare. And so they're preparing reserves. They set up a new army. They've deployed a new force up to the north of Kharkiv, and so that they could very well, which is Kharkiv's the second largest city in Ukraine, so they very well could be planning to take that. So Russia understands they're at war with the West, and they must be prepared to fight.
Is NATO putting offensive weaponry in Finland and Sweden aimed at Moscow?
I don't know specifically, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they've already put offensive weaponry in Ukraine, for God's sake. You know, the supply of attack missiles, HIMARS, Storm Shadow, not to mention the various types of tanks that have been forwarded. So the West is already fully arming. They are complicit. They're facilitating murder. they're facilitating the death and injury of Russian civilians. And you know, at some point, Russia's going to put a line in the sand and say, okay, this stops or else.
Wow. Switching gears, is there significance to the leak, by Western, intelligence services, that they expect the International Criminal Court to indict Prime Minister Netanyahu?
Yeah, I think I heard Ray talk about it earlier. I think it's a diversion. I don't think this is serious. It'd be one thing if that information was coming out of The Hague, but it's not. It's coming out of Jerusalem. So, you know, they may be projecting their own fears, recognizing they have conducted themselves as war criminals with all of the mass graves, you know, being uncovered. I mean, good Lord. You know, we haven't seen this kind of thing since maybe the mass graves that were in Cambodia under the regime of Pol Pot, or the mass graves where the Nazis would line Jews up and shoot them and then bury them, or, you know, what happened in the Katyn Forest where the Poles were lined up by the Soviet commissars and shot. I mean, it's on that scale. And
Ray
and we're enabling it.
Ray reports, and this is stomach churning, that many of these people were stripped naked and zip tied behind their backs, and had a bullet in their head. And some of them had organs removed and then the crude reassembly of the body before being placed in the mass graves. How can this not be the basis of a criminal prosecution or a resistance by an armed military of a state that has a sense of morality and decency?
I mean, it is a complete stain on Israel that it would even participate in something that, you know, it's parallel to what Joseph Mengele did at Birkenau, part of the Auschwitz concentration camp and death camp complex.
Are these mass graves
medical experiments?
Are these mass graves and executions of women and children confirmed?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they've been pulling the bodies out. The bulldozers are going and digging them up. And, you know, it's shocking. But, you know, it's not shocking because we've seen the Israeli Defense Force just routinely bombing civilian areas with no clear military objective. They say, oh, yeah, we're trying to destroy Hamas. You don't destroy Hamas by killing their wives, their sisters, their mothers, their children. All you do is fortify them with the desire, we're going to get you. We will kill you in return. That's all this does. This feeds a cycle of violence that makes it highly unlikely that it's ever going to come to an end.
According to John Sauer, who's the recently retired head of MI6, this is the greatest recruiting tool that Hamas could imagine, which is the behavior of the IDF.
Yeah, and we're enabling it. You know, Russia, without the support of the United States, Israel would not be able to carry out these kinds of operations. You know, we could shut it down. I know that Doug McGregor, Scott Ritter, and others have said this repeatedly, and they're absolutely right. This can be turned off just like flicking a light switch, but the United States refuses to do so. And all of this is taken against the backdrop of we're seeing the rise of an anti-Israeli war movement in the United States that is reminiscent of the anti-Vietnam protesters that took over America starting in, you know, came to sort of a head in 68 and then built momentum going forward that ultimately led to a shift in U.S. policy. I think that's where this is headed, that these protests that are springing up and the brutal police response to what are peaceful protests is simply going to feed a cycle of growth, and that so it will spread, and that the Biden administration is caught with enabling the murder of civilians while trying to pretend that it is doing everything in its power to stop that.
Supreme Court of the United States is wrestling with the issue of presidential immunity. Would Joe Biden have immunity for the slaughter of innocents that he has funded. I don't know. It's a theoretical and yeah. almost a hypothetical question. It's repellent that we're even talking about it. We're not talking about immunity for giving a speech on January 6th. We're talking about immunity for slaughtering innocents.
Well, yeah, I think it would be unlikely that he could be prosecuted under it, because if you did that, you open the door that, you know, Harry Truman should have been prosecuted for the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where he directly gave the orders.
Yeah.
Or the Vietnamese that died under the orders of first John F. Kennedy, then Lyndon Baines Johnson, and then Richard M. Nixon, the Cambodia, you know, so it goes on and on. And this is, you know, part of what maybe we would have a different world if presidents were told, go on in. If you enable the murder of civilians, you're going to be prosecuted.
We would have a different world, and we would have a presidency that confined itself to the moral law and to the Constitution.
Exactly.
Another topic for another time. Did Joe Biden order the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline?
I believe so. I believe Cy Hirsch's account. You know, I've run into a few people that argue that, oh, that was a thing to do, because think about this logic. Germany was dependent on Russia for this cheap gas, and we had to stop that. I'm going, what? You know, what? International economics proceeds from the assumption that a nation state is going to buy what it needs at the lowest possible price. So what the United States effectively did in this by destroying that pipeline was, okay, we're going to teach them they're not going to get that cheap gas from Russia. It didn't disrupt Russia's ability to produce the gas. It simply meant that Russia had to ship it in a different way through a different route, which meant the transportation costs went up, which meant that the people at the end who were buying that gas were going to pay more because the costs were higher. And as a result, not surprisingly, Germany's economy has declined over the last 2 years. It used to be like the fifth largest. It was the largest in Europe, and it was the fifth or sixth largest in the world. Well, now it's dropping down, and it's dropping down in part because of that attack. And it's, you know, what really was going on, the United States wanted to make sure that Germany bought all of its gas from us. That's what was going on.
You had the privilege of speaking before the Security Council of the United Nations on this very topic last week. What did you tell them?
I told them that this, essentially, the refusal to conduct a thorough investigation on this is...
Let me just stop you. By the way, that is Larry at the UN. He's dressed a little differently, just like I would be. But that is very much him. Go ahead. I'm just busting you. Go ahead.
I broke out the UN uniform. You know, I'm back to Florida, what they call Florida business casual today. You know, everybody knows what happened. And here is the West that sits on this hypocritical throne of, we uphold international rules. We must all have everybody abide by these international rules. And they ignore the damn rules every chance they get. So here is clear evidence that the United States blew up, ordered the destruction of that pipeline. And its effect, the negative effect on it, was on the German people. That was my message, and saying, look, it is very easy to investigate this. You just have to have the will to do it. That's how I'd summarize it in one sentence. It was, what was fascinating is the Brits, the French ambassador in particular, what a dreadful human being he is. Just he embodies everything, every negative stereotype about the French. He's it. He should be.
What did he do? Did he listen to you politely and professionally?
Oh, no. He didn't even listen. He didn't listen to any of the briefers. I was preceded by one of the assistant directors in the UN, who dealt with Europe, and then with one of the directors from their Office of Counterterrorism, and then myself. And so when I finished, and then they started having different people around the other representatives speak, the normal way that they would begin, they say, I want to thank the UN representative, and I want to thank the director of counterterrorism, and I want to thank Mr. Johnson, or they would say, I take note. of what Mr. Johnson said. You know, be one of those. Well, what does this French dude do? He shows up and goes, he doesn't even acknowledge any of the people. He doesn't, I don't care if he acknowledged me, but he didn't even show respect to the other UN employees that were there providing a briefing. He just launches immediately into a diatribe against the Russians, complaining that they're blowing up hydroelectric and thermal power plants in Ukraine, and failing to acknowledge that the reason Russia's doing that is because France and the United Kingdom and Germany and the United States are providing weapons that are being used to attack Russian territory and kill Russian civilians and maim Russian civilians. So, like I said, he was a disagreeable sort. He showed up literally, you know, the guy that had been sitting in his place gets up, he sits down, he does his thing, then he gets up and leaves.
Hmm. So, lest the viewers forget, here is President Biden on Nord Stream.
Well, I'll take a couple questions each. Reuters, Andrea, you got the first question.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Chancellor Scholz. Mr. President, I have wanted to ask you about this Nord Stream project that you've long opposed. You didn't mention it just now by name, nor did Chancellor Scholz. Did you receive assurances from Chancellor Scholz today that Germany will, in fact, pull the plug on this project if Russia invades Ukraine? And did you discuss what the definition of invasion could be? And then Chancellor Scholz, wenn ich Sie fragen darf,
if I may ask you, Chancellor Scholz, you said there was some strategic ambiguity that was needed in terms of sanctions. I just wanted to know whether the sanctions you are envisaging and the EU is working on and the US as well are already finished, finalized, or is there still work ongoing? And you're not really saying what the details are. Is that just an excuse for Germany maybe to not support the SWIFT measures?
Let me answer the first question first. If Germany, if Russia invades, that means tanks or troops crossing the border of Ukraine again, then There will be no longer a Nord Stream 2.
Well, that's it right there.
Yeah.
And what was your purpose in speaking at the UN, Larry, to, as I understand it, was to persuade them to conduct a formal investigation of who or what destroyed the pipeline?
Yes. And it was also to put an American voice on the side of the Russians that has experience, as I have, with both intelligence, with international investigations, and with military special operations. And to be able to say, to reiterate points that had already been made by people like Matthew Ho and Karen Kwiatkowski and Scott Ritter and Ray McGovern, each who have had previously addressed the UN Security Council. And just let me note, Judge, that this was like the 9,316th meeting of the UN Security Council. So think about that. I'm not sure there's any other podcast on the internet that has had as many people from their podcast address the United Nations Security Council as you have. So you occupy some rare territory there. But
I'm deeply flattered. At their intellectual honesty, and you're very much in that group, Larry. Are they debating whether or not to investigate who destroyed the pipeline, and is that debate ultimately fruitless because the U.S. will veto an investigation of the U.S.?
Right now, it all hinges on Germany. Up to this point, Denmark and Sweden, they started doing an investigation and they said, nothing, we can't make any conclusions yet. So they punted. They're going to pin it on Germany. And we'll get to find out if Germany's going to be the America's lapdog or not. I think it probably will be. But
the Germans suffered, as you pointed out earlier, they suffered by the loss of this product that their industry and their homes had grown accustomed to.
Right.
And the Chancellor of Germany stood next to the President of the United States while he made a fool of him.
Yeah. And this was, you know, number one, burning natural gas is clean energy. It's not like coal-fired power plants. So this has really led to a political upheaval underway in Germany. The current government very well could be ousted soon. And because the German people are angry about it. Many are. I received actually quite a few comments on the video that was posted from people from Germany expressing appreciation for what I said. So I think Russia continues to bring this up, and it's doing it to remind the West, sort of rub their nose in the fact that you constantly lecture us on rules-based international order, but here you are, the most egregious lawbreakers that there are in the world, and you do it with impunity. And we're just going to continue to remind you that what you did on this, yeah, it cost us economically a little bit, but it didn't hurt us. But you hurt your own allies.
How
and for
were
what
you,
reason?
How were you treated, greeted, received by the American delegation?
Not even acknowledged. I was a non-person. I must say I was warmly received by Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia, and then also by his number two guy, the Ambassador Dmitry Polyansky. Both were very, very gracious, very kind, and very appreciative.
Did Linda Thomas Greenfield come up and shake your hand? That's the American ambassador to the UN.
She didn't even show. She sent one of her lackeys. So he was, and you know, he spent a lot of time surfing on his phone.
Wow. Well, I'm disappointed, but not surprised. So what will happen? They'll debate in the UN, and the US will veto.
Well, yeah, it depends what Germany comes up with. If the Germans actually produce a legitimate investigation, say, okay, yes, as the insurance companies have already admitted, this was an act of war. This is not covered by insurance because this was done by a nation state. And the only nation state with the capability to do this really is the United States. So if the German conclusions come out and point the finger at the United States, then it would be up to the United Nations Security Council to pass a resolution. And at that point, yeah, the U.S. would veto it just to save its own skin, but it would be exposed. And this is not, you know, the purpose of being at the U.N. in part is to acquire, you know, support, to win friends and try to influence enemies. United States is doing the exact opposite. We've got going out of our way, as you know. I think you talked with Ray earlier about Blinken's visit to China. Good right. Lord, do you realize that when Blinken was taken to the airport to leave, they didn't even send the guy who picks up the dog poop for Xi Jinping's dog to say goodbye to him? They didn't send anybody.
Wow.
It was clear that these kinds of messages of who shows up, who's present, says very clearly that the Chinese no longer regard us as somebody worthy of their attention.
Larry, thank you very much. Much appreciated. You did a great job before the Security Council. I'll repeat what I said earlier. If anybody wants to watch Larry's full presentation, it's posted on Judging Freedom. Just go to videos and you'll join the 140,000 folks that have already looked at it. Thank you, Larry. We'll see you Friday for the roundtable with Ray.
Yes, sir. I'll be there.
Of course. Coming up later today at 3 o'clock, Anya Parampal, and at 4:30, Scott Ritter. Justin Politano for Judging Freedom.